Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
One of the books, two to go. Second hour of the show going on right now. It's the Press Box on ESPN. It's Nick and Joel as we take you all the way till 4, having a good time. Hey, congratulations to the University of Houston Cougars as well as the Baylor Bears. First two teams to advance to the Final Four. We've got two more games tonight. USC and Gonzaga is your 6:15 Central tip-off on TBS, followed up by Lisa's UCLA Bruins against the Michigan Wolverines at 8:57 scheduled tip time TBS. So there's that. We were talking a lot about the Rockets. Rafael Stone decided to not stay under the radar like Steven Silas and just keep doing what he does, but was pretty boisterous and outspoken yesterday, and we're breaking it down. Also got your Astros, who now are done with the spring portion of the program and now are ready for the real deal Thursday on ESPN National TV, 907 Central, as Zach Greinke will take the mound for your Astros against the Oakland Athletics. Some encouraging signs and news coming out of breaking spring training that we will get to at a certain point there. We mentioned the Rockets actually lost on the floor again last night. They are a robust 13-33. And now are on their way to Brooklyn to face the MVP in James Harden. That ought to be interesting, as that's on the horizon for tomorrow night.
So before we move on from the Rockets, because we obviously have a lot to talk about, but I'm not quite done with that particular topic. Is there any of those quotes that we missed, Joel, in the Zoom interview that he had?
Other one that I wanted to get to,
because I feel like there's two that I'm missing that I can't seem to see right now in front of me. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to do it in the commercial break, but we'll get to it. The biggest, I guess, I didn't see the input comment, so I guess that would put number three on my list. So to kind of recap what I have issue with, and then we can go to what you continue to have issue with in terms of Rafael Stone, was number one, the year, give me until 2030. I hope the person he texted that to, whichever media member, publishes that. He already made it public, so I don't see what the big deal is. I think the input comment was pretty questionable, because when I covered the Rockets, Tillman Fertitta, like, he seemed like a guy that wants his hands into everything. I've never worked with Tillman Fertitta. I've never had a job with Tillman Fertitta. But there's nothing about his behavior that indicates to me that he doesn't want his input in a lot of stuff. Now, this is weird times, and he has a bunch of restaurants and companies, and he probably is being pulled in about 27,000 different directions. But I would imagine a team that he paid, what, $2.2 billion for, yep, he'd want a little input in terms of the roster, considering he's been a sports fan in this town for quite some time. They literally called it the Fertitta Center. He didn't even go to the University of Houston. So, I think he would have a lot more input. And then there was one more issue that I had with it was, oh, yeah, the knowledge comment. I hate when executives say that. You don't know what I know. This is why we question you. You get the hard questions because you are an executive that's getting paid well. I just think that's a weak, weak comment. But
I got one more for you.
Okay.
I got one more comment. One of the quotes, the other quotes, Kelly Eco reported, was that Stone came out and said, the team will be very prepared for the draft and free agency. Very prepared for the draft and free agency. Later, when pressed about some of the top picks and what they were getting, well, we really haven't gotten into it yet. Well, guess what? The college season is over with. You should be prepared every year. Let me just tell you this right now. This is what got my ire. And this is, first of all, my exact response initially was, as common practice, every basketball operations department prepares for the draft and free agency, regardless if they have picks or money or not. If you find players you like, you make moves for them. If they go undrafted, you snatch them up. At the same time, you can maneuver cap flexibility by trading other players out, so that creates opportunities for free agency, and you're constantly looking to acquire picks during the draft. When you acquire the picks, you have a player or players in mind that you already have scouted that you know and you want. So that is a very naive statement, and I don't care how anybody else tries to dissect it. It was stupid to say it because you should be prepared for both every single year. You don't think the Texans were prepared for, are prepared for this draft and are prepared for free agency and were prepared for free agency this year, even though they didn't have a lot of money? And they were in a cap hell situation. Nick Caserio did his job, and so far he's done it well because he was prepared, because that's what they've been doing all year.
Yeah, and that's bad. If you're supposed to have done all your homework by now, I think that's bad. I mean, what else are you supposed to do as the general manager? I don't know what your work schedule is like. I don't imagine it's not like you're doing a bunch of administrative duties where you're just tied up for 12 hours at a time. You should be looking at players and what could fit in this roster with this budget and this salary cap and stuff like that. So I, you know, if he's not, you know, I think a lot of this for Rafael Stone, as it may be painful to hear, is he's learning as he's going along, guys. And
yeah, that's awful.
And that's just, for some people, that's just what it takes. Not everybody who became a good general manager had general management experience before becoming a general manager. So,
but how many got the gig, Nick? Unless you're the owner's son. And I look at Johnny Buss with the Lakers, and I look at Patrick Fertitta, his dad
owns
the team.
Like, even Daryl Morey, he was groomed
right
into the position.
What he's doing right now is he's learning on the job. Patrick Fertitta, I give him credit for that. But Rafael Stone, all of a sudden, you're going to tell me because you followed Daryl for 1 year, and before that, between Kevin McHale, who asked me why he was in practice every day and did he ever do any legal things because he wouldn't go away, and the basketball ops operations department saying they thought he was in meetings to eat the food, but then he started chiming in and was going to every meeting, and everybody was asking, what the heck are you doing? All of a sudden, that makes you qualified to just jump into, be assistant GM. Learn with some responsibility. But don't do it like this if you're Tillman, because the team's been too good for too long.
Yeah, I mean, they've been too good for too long, and it's been because of one, maybe two players for the entire time. And
it's been more than that.
It's been for the past 8 years, it's been basically Harden.
It's been
basically
with Harden,
for the past 18. Who else?
You had Dwight. You had Chris Paul. You had Russell Westbrook. You had a lot of other pieces, and they made, look, you don't win 65 games in a year. You don't do and set a franchise record. You don't go to the Western Conference Finals with Dwight Howard, of all people, if you didn't have other players.
No, without a doubt, though, that's true. But they've been so good for so many years, but they needed that star to be that good that many years. They're not going to be anywhere close to that without a star player. And I love Christian Wood, and I think a lot of people in this city love him too, but he's just not that player yet. He has the potential to evolve into something great. Will he? That remains to be seen. And the guy, you know, I mean, he's young, so there's a lot of time left ahead on him, and the jury's still out on him. So, well, look, at the end of the day, it's not like the Houston Rockets were going to get good anytime soon. It was a matter of, could you cut that time short? That awful growing pain of, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons. Could you possibly cut that short? It just doesn't look good right now if you're a Rockets fan. That's just the way it is, unfortunately. So
you're going to have to – it's a long and deep hole to dig out of, right? So it's going to take time anyway. It's just that you'd be better off to kind of take the Steven Silas approach, the kind of quiet as kept, kind of just soft-spoken, you know – you just kind of say little things here and there. That whole press conference yesterday was so over the top, egotistical, and just, I think, overspoken that, I mean, I'm trying to set this up for people the best way I can because of all the context that I have. And for someone to say, and I tell you what, we don't block people on Twitch, and for good reason. We get good discussions. People call other people out. They do these things. We got a couple of ass clowns on text that we know the numbers by heart, okay? And so it shouldn't even warrant a conversation. But someone's trying to tell me that if I know something and I don't tell you about it, that I'm unprofessional. Well, guess what? I'm telling you as much as I can tell you, and you still are in the know, and you know more than you're getting elsewhere. It's just that I'm also going to be protective of others that are involved. So therefore, I don't need your grading scale and your guidance. And if you want to be here for the program and get the information that we're kicking out, hey, so be it. Come on along for the ride. If you don't, then stop doing that because it's just going to slow the progress of the show. All right. The other thing is, Nick, when you get a gig like this, it's important to talk about, and we'll talk about it as we move on with the show. You have to have the respect of the players, and you have to have communication with the coach. The one thing that you and I talked about in the past I want to bring up at some point was we feel bad for Steven Silas. Is that agreed?
100%. I mean, and in terms of the fact that he's losing, that his personal life, the guy's making money, he's fine.
But like McHale had a great relationship with Daryl. Whoever, D'Antoni had a great relationship. Van Gundy loves Daryl. So if you're the general manager, you're trying to put your coach in a position to succeed, especially if it's the first hire you ever made, right? Then how do you do something like you did with P.J. Tucker and not tell him ahead of time, P.J.'s not going to be available anymore? And Silas
that comes,
admitted
that
it.
Comes in the lack, a lack in experience right there.
I agree.
You know, I don't know if it was intentional. As long as it's not intentional at that point, I can deal with a mistake like that here and there. As long as it doesn't continue to happen, it's like as long as he doesn't make a habit of not telling him that these players won't be available when Silas went under the impression. I think that was a mini call out by Silas to.
I completely agree.
You know, so no.
Okay, we're going to be back with a whole lot more. We got to get to a break, so we make sure we keep it on time. But we're going to keep it on schedule and keep it rolling. It's the Press Box. It's ESPN. It's such a mess.
You need me one day. ESPN 97.5.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
So, other news of the day. NFL owners have approved the 17-game season for this upcoming season of NFL football. I don't like it, Nick, because I like it. Until I saw that the extra game added for the Packers was the Chiefs.
Oh,
I don't really care for that a whole lot, but I guess everybody with an unbalanced schedule gets somebody, and therefore everybody gets, I believe it would be less preseason games as well, but you're going to get a 17-game regular season, so more games that count is always good for the viewer.
I guess it's time to make up some of the money that I guess that they lost in the pandemic. But let's be real, the NFL is above and beyond any of the big three sports in the United States in terms of generating revenue.
The players are not happy to add an extra regular season game.
And they're not.
The comments are already coming out. Two pro days today, Mac Jones at Alabama, which the Niners, general manager John Lynch, and head coach Kyle Shanahan were at, as opposed to Justin Fields' Ohio State pro day, which no one from the Niners was at. Does that give you a clear-cut sign who they're looking at for number three in the draft?
Maybe. That might be an indicator. Or they could just be unprepared like your boy Rafael Stone. I don't know. Who knows?
That's Rosetta to you. Justin Fields ran a 4.44 in the 40 at Ohio State's pro day. So there's information there for you. Other than that, we talked about what was going on in the men's Final Four. In the women's Final Four, if you're a Baylor Bear fan, as happy as you are that your men's team is going to the Final Four, you got to be less than pleased with the final call in what was a great game.
By the way, why were you texting me about that game during the Cougs game? I'm just curious.
Well, let me just spell it out for you. One, we mentioned it on the show, and you said, you know, we were talking about whether you would watch it or not. And at halftime of the Cougs game, I had seen tweets from many different people, including athletes, celebs, and otherwise, talking about the game. Flipped it over, saw that it was a good game, texted you, hey, by the way, Lady Bears up 5 on UConn, to which you had some less than printable remarks and some comments.
Well,
to
I knew after we put a whooping on the Beavers that we would face Baylor. I had nothing nice to say about Baylor, and I shouldn't. I'm a Cougs guy. Why should I say anything nice about Baylor?
It's a state school. You haven't gotten to that point yet. You didn't know if they
meanwhile
were
y'all's
their game.
Y'all's coach are against COVID testing, which is
it's
a
not
whole
my coach.
Y'all,
Kim Mulkey has an issue with at this point because they've been tested so much that at the Final Four she doesn't think they should be tested anymore because it takes a lot out of the players. That's neither here nor there. In a great game between UConn and Baylor, Baylor got the shaft at the end of that game as there was clearly a foul on the last play and an attempt to tie the game. No call made, and Gino Auriemma, I guess, because they kept asking him about it after Kim Mulkey said, I've got it on my phone, I've got multiple pictures, there's multiple angles that show she got hit in the face, she got hit in the arm, she got fouled, and Gino said, because LeBron was even chiming in and everybody else, he goes, I'm sure LeBron never won a game because of a call that wasn't made. He's not going to apologize for it, nor should he. But someone from the NCAA should have something to say about the way that game ended.
Whatever. Look, the better team won. Hashtag Huskies.
The better team won.
The better team won. What was her?
You're already stirring it up with Baylor people.
What was her free throw shooting percentage anyway? There's no.
Wasn't better than yours, was it?
There's no guarantee she was going to make either one of those free throws to begin with. All right.
Hashtag DJ Huskies. Carrington is the best player on that team.
What's her free throw shooting percentage? What's her name again?
Well, if you her Dejanay, but it's DJ Carrington at Baylor, if you want to look it up.
DJ Carrington.
Yeah, if you want to look it up. And then
probably
tell
a 70% free throw shooter.
First of all,
tops.
What's more impressive, the way she plays and how good she is, or the fact that she does so with like 5-inch eyelashes and long fingernails? It's impressive.
That's the other thing. I feel like there's a whole new market now because now women are, like when they're playing, they're not gonna look bad playing. They're gonna look good playing.
No, she had major game going on while she's got major game going on. Credit and props to her.
I'm not mad at it.
It was 68-67 with 5 seconds left when Carrington got the basketball, and it appeared to be fouled by two separate Husky players. However, no foul was called. UConn got the ball. Won the game after a foul was called, and they made one of two free throws to make the 2-point difference in the way the game ended. However, she didn't have to make both free throws, Nick. If she only made one, it was tied. If she made two, they
went
ahead.
There's no guarantee she would have made even one.
Your Baylor hate is way premature.
We don't know.
Why would you not pull for a Texas school over the juggernaut of UConn?
If that Texas school wasn't going against my Texas school, then
it'd
be okay.
It's the guys, not the women. So what does it matter? If it was the Lady Cougs in that game, I get it, but it's not. Come on, Nicholas.
They are who we thought they were. That's all I got to say.
You got a lot of hate in your belly, and it's a little, like I said, way too early for all of that.
Not really. I mean, we're just days away from facing Baylor. I mean, if it's any crap talking that needs to go down, it's today, it's tomorrow, it's the whole week, really. Like, there's not going to be no Baylor fight song going to be played between the hours of 1 to 4. That's for damn sure.
You know what? I might do it just to spite you. I might just play it right off my computer.
You might have to do it off your phone.
That's fine. It's nothing Charlie hasn't done before.
It's so funny that he didn't want to play the final call. And then he's like, just play it, Nick. Just play it. And then he eventually did. I mean, look, you can't get mad at the fact that there's a little fan in everybody, right?
Absolutely. If it should be.
If it was up to you, Wisconsin would be in the Final Four, right?
No, they weren't that good this year. I mean, they were good.
I mean, but if they could make it, you take it. I mean, let's be honest. None of us really knew for sure that the University of Houston was going to make it to the Final Four. We all thought they had a chance. That for sure. But we didn't know for sure. It wasn't like cut and dry. This team, this squad right here is going to make it to the Final Four. We all thought they had a legit chance. And when they got over the Syracuse hump, I'm like, wow, that's great, man. I mean, this is a team with some confidence and some grit. And the fact that they like to grind out wins, and the fact that there's no spotlight over one player over the other, I think it helps so much. And then you got a great coach like Kelvin Sampson.
Yeah.
So I appreciate everything the University of Houston does, and I don't appreciate anything that Baylor does. And I'm okay with saying that. And
there
I think
are
most people
on the Twitch line, otherwise they're going to come at you, and I commend them for doing so because you deserve it. But
not really.
I think it's too early. And I'm pulling for your Cougs, but I draw a line in the sand because I don't think it has anything to do with the Lady Bears.
How many people even are on that damn campus anyway?
Baylor?
Yeah.
First of all, let me just tell you something. Baylor's got a lot of money.
Whatever.
Okay.
Well, because they're private.
It's in the middle of nowhere, but they've got a hell of a campus. And by the way, your own friend, Carol Dawson.
He went to Baylor?
He went to Baylor. So did John McClain, guys. He's a big Baylor Bear. Carol Dawson, I believe, funded the baseball stadium.
Yeah.
He's donated a ton.
How's their baseball
Drayton
team doing?
Drayton McClain has donated a ton. Baylor's got a really good campus. See, I think you're going overboard now.
I'm not really going overboard.
Fred are Cougs. I like that. I don't think Fred's got that much hate in his heart for Baylor this early.
I don't. I honestly didn't even watch the game. And from everything that you and Charlie
said.
You had
to tell me how it ended.
Because I thought you were going to give me the update, and then I had literally Googled it because you were
so smart-ass, I wasn't giving you anything after that.
And then it literally updated on my screen because I have three screens in front of me. So it just updated right in front of me. That's why I was able to text you and let you know. And look, from what you said and from what Charlie said, I didn't see the game. It sounds like the girl did indeed get fouled.
Fouled twice.
Carrington did indeed get fouled.
Yes.
Okay. But the better team still won. Well, the Huskies still won.
And again, you and I were talking about that. I'm sick and tired of UConn being there every single year. I root for the underdog as it is.
I agree with
but
that.
But I need more parity in women's basketball.
It sucks, but that's just the way it is. And when you look at any girl that has a legitimate chance to play at the D1 level, they're always automatically talking about UConn, you know, or rest her soul, you know, God rest her soul, Kobe's daughter. Like that was kind of like the pinnacle for her. That's what she wanted. She wanted to be a basketball player so bad. And if she was going to play, she wanted to play at UConn. So I get it. If you're a girl coming up and you want to play basketball, I get why you would want to go to the best school. It's what guys do when they want to play football or basketball. They don't, if they have the skill set and if they're good enough, why would they play at the smaller school? Like, let's be real. If you're a Houstonian right now and you have the legit chance to get a scholarship from Alabama, SC, A&M, UT, no offense. Why is University of Houston your first choice, unless you can just, there's a selling point that you cannot.
But there's plenty of selling points now.
There is, but it's hard. I'm not mad at that person.
Right? You're not the big time schools, but at the same time, something to be said about, I want to be part of that run. I want to be part of resurrecting that program where it's at. I mean, I want to be a part. Look, I want to practice every day at that cool new practice facility. I want to play in that new arena. I want to do those kind of things.
No, I agree with that. But my whole point is I'm not mad at a Houstonian who
probably for Kelvin Sampson,
who probably lives two blocks away, who could even live two blocks away from the campus, consider other schools first. It's not a bad thing to do.
I told you this off the air though. The story within the story in terms of how it relates to just college sports in general. UConn's best player, Paige Buchers, had 28 points. She grew up and is great friends with Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga, who also, in another sidebar, was recruited heavily by Ohio State out of Minnesota as a quarterback. You want to talk about an athlete?
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if like some small school in college wanted you to play quarterback or some mid-major. The fact that Ohio State wanted him to play quarterback, Gonzaga wanted him to play basketball, he's going to be a top five pick in the NBA draft. And oh, by the way, one of my really great friends could win the national championship at UConn, and she's their best player. Pretty cool story.
Look, congrats to the Huskies. Unfortunately, Baylor got screwed, okay?
Did you
Sorry,
see the call?
Carrington. For
Did
getting
you see the call? Watch it during the break. She got screwed. It was a horrible no call.
Just all right, I'll look at it. I'll
watch
look at
it
the
during
replay.
The break. And not just her lashes and nails that you're going to be enamored with.
No,
watch
I'm going to look the at the call. I'm going to look at the play.
All right. Good news from your Astros. They're getting ready to play Thursday night for real against the Oakland A's. And they may not be done trying to upgrade the roster. So we can get to that and a whole lot more as we get to the second half of the program. Stick with us. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Bickle! Down the floor, caught by Beckers, and the streak lives! a 13th straight trip to the Final Four for the UConn Huskies.
Well, did you watch it?
I did.
Did she get fouled?
What I would tell Carrington is, good thing you didn't play in the NBA in the 80s and 90s, because that was nothing. That was nothing.
Answer the question. Did she get fouled?
Didn't see a foul.
Oh, you're an idiot. Well, you got Baylor people just, they're going
to
start.
That's a good no call.
They're going to sick them right at you.
We need to start seeing more no calls by referees because they just absolutely
wussified
the game. Let me ask
you, if that was Quentin Grimes in the same situation, did he get fouled?
It's a good thing she didn't play in the NBA in the
80s. If that was Quentin Grimes, did he get fouled?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's what I thought.
But in this particular play, Carrington did not get fouled. Good no call by the official. But what you're saying about Carlos Correa?
You should be a soup ladle the way you're stirring the pot. So Carlos Correa, one, if you saw the numbers that Francisco Lindor turned down, is it safe to say, Nick, that, and I'm asking you this realistically, do you think that Carlos Correa thinks he is as good or better than Francisco Lindor?
Yes. In his mind, I think he sold himself. It's like the dude that knows he's spitting a lie. But he lies so much, and he believes his own lie. He becomes pathological.
Somewhat delusional,
it.
But Lindor's looking for 12 years, $384 million. If Correa's getting it, he ain't getting it here. And two, he ain't worth it, and Lindor's not worth 12 years.
I don't think he's getting 10 or even 8, Correa. Is he even getting 8?
I don't think so, especially with his health issues.
I don't think he even gets 8.
Now, according to Bleacher Report, and this is just nuts to me, because Bleacher Report's headline were best landing spots for Carlos Correa if it's not with the Astros. So we're not there yet. We know that the deadline, he said, self-imposed, was the first game of the regular season. He wanted a deal either done by then or he wasn't going to talk about it during the year and he was going to test the market. Well, it's Thursday, so we've got the clock ticking whether they can get a deal done or not. But Nick and I have already dissected how many years we thought he should get versus how many he wanted. The price, we let you guys chime in on what you thought the best thing was. No one is saying over 30.
He turned down a 10-year, $325 million contract. I mean, his agent has to be okay with this.
Who turned that down? Lindor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, how do you turn down a 10-year? Is he really going to get more than that?
It depends, man. He's a hell of a player. I just don't know. Here's the thing.
No, Correa cannot think he's even on this level.
I don't think so, but I think he does. I don't think he should, but I think he does.
Now, when I said before that I think he's just as good, I thought, okay, well, the numbers we were talking about with Lindor was closer to $10 million. We weren't talking about 12 years. We weren't talking about 12 years. We were talking about 8 years or 10 years. So when we were comparing that situation and using that as kind of a, you know, as a barometer,
right.
You know, for Carlos Correa, we're like, no way. He doesn't think that. Now, do I think he was worth closer to 8 than as opposed to 10 or 12? Yes, but when you see reports like that, one thing that could do to someone like Carlos Correa is it sells him on the idea even further that he's worth that much. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think he's worth as much as Lindor by a long shot. When Houston made the offer that they made to Correa, it was essentially the exact same offer that Xander Bogaerts got from the Red Sox and accepted entering the 2019 season. But Bogaerts was 26 at the time and coming off a huge season. We know Correa just turned 26 in September, so the age alone could get him the big payday. But I'm worried about the multiple. As I said, the longer the term, the more I worry about his injury history. But Bleacher Report says these are the three teams. Now, I'm just going to tell you right off the top of my head, I would have said the Yankees, who are still searching for a real shortstop, the Red Sox, who are going to finally have money to play with again in the next year, and then a wild card team that maybe I'm not aware of. I don't know who that might be that has a little extra cash. But in no way, shape, or form was I coming up with the list the Bleacher Report came up with, starting with the Cincinnati Reds.
What?
Daniela ain't going for the chili mac and cheese or whatever it is.
I love how she's being brought up in every single part.
Even
of this
they
situation.
Brought it up.
Yeah. Even who did? Cincinnati?
No,
or
Bleacher Report.
Oh, Bleacher Report did? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So one was the Cincinnati Reds, which I don't see happening.
No, I don't see Cincinnati happening.
So that was...
Unless he's mad enough at the Astros, I can see him going to a team where like, what? Why did he sign with that team? Well, he's really angry at the Astros. Other than that, I can't see him signing with Cincinnati. Who else?
The San Francisco Giants.
More possible than the Reds?
They have Brandon Crawford. He's a Bay Area native. He went to UCLA. Big fan favorite. But they seem to be on the rebuild. But why would that then... entice them to say, I'm going to throw all this money and all these years at Correa?
Nothing. I don't see it either.
Okay. And the third one, which is just head scratching, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, Daniela would be happy about that.
She would not.
Hollywood, bro.
Yeah, but LA. That fan base went at her, too.
That's the life.
I guarantee you she got the business from Dodgers fans. Now, they would totally embrace her in the event that Carlos Correa becomes a Dodger. They'll totally overlook anything that happened. But I don't see that happening. I just don't. It's one thing when a pitcher like Gerrit Cole goes and signs with the Yankees. I just don't see that happening.
You know why this is not going to happen? Because the Dodgers have a 26-year-old shortstop whose contract is up, too, named Corey Seager, who's really damn good, who played unbelievable last year.
Let's say they didn't have Seager.
Well, that's the thing. If they know Seager's walking, then they might be interested in Correa, but they're not going to pay. Their payroll and all that they're paying already.
But the Dodgers will overpay, just like the Yankees.
Sure they will, but at a certain point, you got to say enough is enough. You're paying Trevor Bauer out the nose. You're still playing Kershaw out the nose. You just signed Justin Turner back at a big contract. You're paying Mookie Betts out the nose. I mean, at a certain point, you got to go, okay, I can't pay everybody way over market value.
Yeah, I feel like more teams should think like that. That's the one thing that bothers me about these massive contracts in baseball. It's like, who's going to be that first guy? Because to me, the only reason why the numbers go up that high and contract years go up that high is because of leverage. Somehow, some way, they earn the leverage. How do you propose a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year contract without having some sort of leverage? And so I just want to see more organizations just put their foot down in situations like that where the player has more leverage and be that person to that team that sets precedent. And all leagues, not just baseball. Like with the whole Deshaun Watson contract in that situation, even before the sexual allegations, I wanted to see the team stand firm and say, you know what? You signed that massive contract that didn't even take effect yet. Give us an opportunity. No. We're not just going to trade you wherever you want to go,
pal. I'm with Ayotte on Twitch. Ayotte, you just got the third team that I would put in there. I think don't sleep on the Rangers. I think the Rangers with the new ballpark, if we get back to normal and they start getting revenue again. And
is he a Rangers fan?
They're looking, doesn't make it. They're going to make a splash. You go out, you twofold. You go out and get a shortstop at 26. Remember how they made the big push for A-Rod when he was in his prime? So I could see them going after him, and it's a double FU because, one, it's a win for them because they get a young, up-and-coming, promising shortstop still at 26 with potential, and that's a marketing tool for the franchise. And
without
two,
a doubt,
it kicks the Astros in the groin.
Yeah, they'll sell tickets. They'll put butts in seats with Carlos there. Not that he's going to be that much of a game changer, but he'll definitely add to the perception, and they'll have the money in the room for it. But I don't know. I don't know if the Rangers are even pursuing something like that. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. I mean,
they're going to generate a lot of revenue just on opening day alone because they're going to go 100%. And I know for a fact, even if the Rangers are not going to turn out to be a good team, that there's going to be some good attendance there at Globe Life with that new stadium and everything. So, I don't know. I can't believe the numbers with Lindor. It's because I don't remember us talking about a potential 10 or 12 year deal with Lindor the last time we had this discussion. I don't remember that. So something is driving this number up, I feel like, unless this was the potential discussions about the numbers from day one. Now, I did see on Twitter that Cohen, the owner of the Mets, I guess, had dinner with Lindor, and he, I guess he was joking, and he responded to one of the people tweeting at him and said, is it true that you had dinner with him? And he didn't really say yes or no, but he said something like the ravioli was bad or something like that. So I followed him on Twitter. I've been following him on Twitter for a while.
I'm a big fan of Lindor.
No.
And he's a hell of a player. I just don't think he's worth that. But you know what? You're only worth what someone's willing to pay you. And if, you know, your boy is going to set the market on its ear anyway. Now that Tatis Jr. got the deal he got,
unbelievable.
Everybody wants the massive amount of years and the massive amounts of dollars.
And if the timing is right with your contract and your negotiation timing is right, you'd be surprised what you can get. That's why Carlos doesn't seem so happy right now, okay? Because
he's overpriced himself.
He overpriced himself, but also they don't have to make a deal right now.
No, they don't.
They don't have to make a deal right now.
But here's the thing. And the other thing is that since it's a self-imposed deadline of opening day, what, at midseason, if they come to you and say, all right, let's get a deal done, would you say, no, I'm not talking because I said I'm not?
And it might get to that situation. If he, like, kicks ass the first half of the season, he may leave them no choice. We don't know.
What if he doesn't?
Then that hurts his cause. And that's probably why it goes back to your point about how he was pushing
for the deal to get done before the first game.
Takes a whole lot of pressure off of him. He's got the deal in his back pocket as opposed to playing for his payday.
Now remember, now he has to deal with the pressure of playing well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But he also has to deal with the pressure of the fans, because remember, they still want to get their licks in as well. So it's not it's really multiple channels of pressure. Yep. And I'd rather deal with the pressure that he's going to get with the fans, because I think that's a different type of pressure. When I already know I'm under contract, then I don't have to deal with it.
Well, the good news from an Astros perspective is at least they're going to open up their checkbook with the possibilities of adding someone to the roster. As we're getting down to roster cutdowns and every team having to make tough decisions when it relates to their roster and salaries, Chandler Rome of the Chronicle reporting, as Dusty Baker told reporters, every team keeps an eye on other clubs' cuts or waiver moves this year, and the Astros are going to be more inclined than usual to make a move given some of their recent absences with COVID concerns, i.e., Miles Straw, and also because they have a possible need for a center fielder and or a fourth outfielder, which right now could be and looks like it will be Chaz McCormick. So they're going to be looking at other teams' moves to see if anybody's cut or anybody's willing to be traded and looking to add to their roster. I like that because I don't want them to just sit on their hands and go, we're good enough to win the division. I want them to be where they once were and compete for a championship.
Yeah, you want them to push the gas. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
So that's good news if you're an Astros fan there. All right, we've got plenty more to get to. We'll wrap up hour number two and get into hour number three as we continue to progress. And we love having you along for the ride. It's the Press Box. It's ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
I don't claim to be a women's college basketball aficionado, but we got a text message that said that DJ Carrington was 7 of 22 in the game from the free throw line.
Oh, 40%. She
was. Now, wait a minute. She went to the line 22 times? Is she James Harden?
She shot 22 free throws, which means she went probably what? 10 times, 12 times?
No, but I'm saying she shot 22 free throws in that game? I got a hard time believing that. I got to see that in the box.
I got to find that stat, but I'm just telling you right now. If she shoots 7 from 22 from the free throw line, I don't want to hear no garbage from you Baylor fans, to be honest with you.
You'd be holding your breath hoping she at least made one.
Let me see. If she was 7 for 22, you guys are all up in arms about that bad call, and she's 7
for
22?
Okay, that was false. Okay, way to go, texter. This is another reason why I hate the text line. She was 7 of 22 from the floor, okay?
Okay, that's still garbage.
She still had 22 points, and she was 7 of 10 from the line. Last time I checked, that's still 70%.
That's exactly what I said. I said 70%.
But I'm just saying, 70% is a whole lot different than 40%, texter.
So she made a trip to the free throw line 5 times, right? Because it was 10 free throws. And 3 of the 5 times, she missed the free throw. There was no chance. There was no guarantee. There were going to win that game. Sorry.
I bet you they tie it. I'd feel pretty good about them tying it. I'd give her a pretty good chance. 70%.
Sounds like
it's a better than average chance of making both of them.
Just clank.
Well, you are just trolling the hell out of the Bears today.
Just clank.
It's only going to get worse as we get closer to the game. Now, God forbid for you, Nick, that your Cougs don't get completely wiped off the floor by Baylor, because you are going to get annihilated.
Who cares? I mean, these Baylor fans act like they were watching that game anyway.
Okay.
They weren't watching that game.
Ooh. Well, here's a question from the text.
Y'all don't even know who Carrington was before the whole foul call and Charlie and Joel brought it up. Y'all don't even know who she was.
I think, look, my buddy Brent went to Baylor. He knows about both teams. They know their stuff. Oh, God. Want a painful scenario on text from the text line as well? Would you take Josh Reddick back for 1 year as the fourth outfielder, regardless of the price?
I'm just over his at-bats, man. Like, I don't care that you're mad and you break a bat or throw something because you're mad because you didn't get on base. Like, you just don't. You don't command the plate very well anymore. You just don't. I just don't like his at-bats. So, no. My answer to that question, in short, would be no.
I'm agreeing with you.
I love the personality aspect.
I love the dumb crap
good
that he did in the clubhouse. Yeah,
you liked him in a Speedo. That was always your thing.
That's not what I said. But I don't like him. I wouldn't want him. I think he's too much of a liability, even at 1 year.
Okay. Coming out of the Texans camp today, aside from just any more details on more cases filed, and I think, what are we still at, 19 for total cases filed?
I think that was the last update that we got was 19 total civil cases. Now, but I don't know if that's been upped.
Now this from Sarah Barshop, our good friend of the show that covers the Texans for ESPN. Nick Caserio says the lawsuits filed against Deshaun Watson alleging sexual assault and inappropriate conduct were certainly troubling, quote unquote, and something the team takes, quote, very seriously. We're certainly cognizant and aware, Caserio told the Texans All Access podcast. We made a statement at the beginning about where the organization stood. I would say it's a legal situation. It's a legal process. So we're certainly respectful of that. We certainly take them very seriously, the allegations, what's been discussed, and certainly troubling. And organizationally, that's not something that we can condone, that we can condone those type of actions.
That's a good, smart Nick Caserio answer. Now, had you put McNair in that particular situation, he might have been stripped of the team because that's how dumb he is when it comes down to addressing the media. Don't expect to get any juicy quotes out of Nick Caserio. If you're going to get any juicy quotes out of this Houston Texans team, it's not going to come from Nick Caserio. If you're going to hear any dumb quotes or anything that you think that doesn't make sense, in most cases, it's probably not going to be Nick Caserio. I am pretty sold on that. That is the exact stance that you should take if you're the general manager when your star quarterback is dealing with all these sexual allegations. He's going to just hope that this passes by sooner rather than later. That way he can move on from this situation, whether it means Deshaun Watson remains in a Texans uniform or it doesn't. Clearly, Terod was an insurance policy, and this is going to take a lot longer than we expect it to. But he's not going to give you anything.
I think it's more than an insurance policy, though. I think you got your starter. And if you don't, you got a really good backup that you can play your regular offense.
Yeah.
Instead of telling A.J. McCarron, go out there and try to run the plays the way Deshaun does. Now you've got a guy that's as athletic or close to as athletic as Watson. So if it all works out for Deshaun and somehow he works it out with the organization, he's your starter, you got a great backup. If not, you got a proven, tested, veteran NFL quarterback to at least start the games for you.
Yeah. And look, we don't know how well he will do. I heard the Blitz talk about this, or at least AJ talk about this too. He goes, I guess we didn't give enough credence to the fact that Cam Newton, it takes about a year to kind of learn a new offense. And so I don't know where Terod falls in this situation. If the Texans offense is difficult to the point where there's a learning curve and it may not be that seamless. I don't think any of us really expected them to be a super good team this year anyway, even with Deshaun Watson remaining at the quarterback. Everybody just feels like, well, we got Deshaun Watson. That's a massive start. Hopefully we can put enough weapons around him and make this go. But that's not the situation. That's just simply not the status of the Texans right now. So I don't know. I mean, I think the Deshaun Watson situation is going to take so long. I expect Terod to be in uniform and playing for the Texans as long as he's healthy and passes all the protocols week one. And I expect him to be the quarterback for at least two games. As long as he's healthy and still on the roster, I don't see how it's possible that Deshaun gets through this before week one. Now, I could be wrong, and I kind of want to, because I want to know what his fate is. I want to know if this remains in civil status or does it go to criminal. I want to know if he's going to play another down in the NFL, because these are all questions that are legitimate at this point. So I don't know. I mean, it's getting to the point where, just like the Rockets, unless it's a new development, kind of like with Rafael Stone, there's nothing more to add unless there's an update in the number of lawsuits and he's saying something publicly or he's tweeting, and you know he's not going to do that right now. It's just basically being redundant and saying the same thing over and over and over again.
Well, and I think that, again, the thing that really is puzzling to me is if there was going to be criminal charges brought up, Busby had already indicated he had been contacted by HPD, which was blown out of the water. And then he showed a text message which said detective at the top of it. But we don't know. You can call your contact lists, whatever, you know, the people in your contact list, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Then, you know, HPD took it to the standpoint of tweeting. We still don't have anything brought to us so that we can pursue or even look at or consider anything criminal. Well, then the district attorney's office, who would have to get involved, has also chimed in. And so as part of Sarah Barshop's report, she said that the Dan Schiller, a spokesperson for the Harris County District Attorney's Office, said it would be inappropriate for the DA's office to comment on the lawsuits against Watson. He said, quote, it would be inappropriate for the DA's office to comment on a civil lawsuit, and we refrain from publicly discussing allegations in any matter until and if a criminal charge is filed. We do this out of fairness to all.
Makes sense. I mean,
all that, it makes sense, but to me, it lends itself to saying, I don't think anybody's doing this and filing criminal charges yet, and I don't know that they will. And it seems like the end result is this is all going to see its way through.
That means if that's the case, there is a possibility that he plays week one.
Well,
do you think
NFL
he plays week one?
No, I don't. I think the NFL, one way or another, is going to punish
him. Do you think there's a bet like that on my bookie, whether or not he plays week one, week two, week three, week four, week five? There probably is.
I mean, if you look at just what's been all reported and what the NBA, I mean, the NFL is all about image, too. And what a story like this does for not only the player, but the team and the league.
Yeah.
We know that Zeke never saw it get to the point of anything legal, and yet Zeke got six games. So I would think that regardless of what happens with Deshaun, just all of this being out there, I think it's a minimum of six games.
Agreed. I think six games is a good number, at least in terms of a minimum.
And start there, and then depending on if any of these civil cases see their way all the way through and or their settlements, the legal, I think, will act accordingly. All right, we got two in the books. We still got an hour to go. Plenty more of the show, so lots of opportunities for you guys in the final hour to get involved in the program. We were pretty sportsy in the first 2 hours. We can still mix it up, but we're looking to see what's on your mind you want to get off your chest. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call, text, either otherwise hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. It's Nick and Joel. It's the Press Box. It's ESPN.
Well, hello!
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.